Hello, guys, and welcome to another podcast for Morningstar Men. This one is for the week of May the 11th. As we have been doing, we are continuing in our series, Spiritual Coaching. This morning, we're going to do a little bit of review of some of the places that we've been. We're going to try to tie together many of the principles that we've thus far discussed, or at least some of those principles. And then for a little while, we're going to move into a new topic for the morning. It's a continuation of the second phase of spiritual coaching. In the first phase, we looked at some basic principles for how to care for ourselves on the inside, how to invest in ourselves, and some of those techniques, some of those strategies for doing that. In this second phase, we're exploring how does my inner man intersect with and respond to the overarching commitments of the male life. So, for instance, several weeks ago, we looked at the topic of work. This past week, we looked at a man and his marriage. How does my inner man intersect with my marriage and my commitment to remain faithful to one woman for life? And this week, we're looking at a man and parenting. And so we'll be exploring, at least in brief detail, how does my inner man and the growth of my inner man intersect with the demands placed on me by parenting. So I think you'll find this to be very instructive, very helpful. There's some real life application principles, both for how we parent, but also for looking at our own lives that we're going to explore today. I think you're going to find this to be a truly helpful recording. You may want to actually listen to this one more than one time through. Hope you have a good week, guys. Hope this podcast blesses you. We welcome your comments. We welcome your feedback. And see you again next week. Jim is the only one I know who can talk about his talking and feel comfortable about talking about his talking.
Maybe we should talk about it.
We would, but we wouldn't talk about it. Jim would do most of the talking about it. So, okay. Maybe you've noticed this, and if not, I'll call your attention to it. Every week when we look at a topic, I'm also trying to integrate into the topic some other principles. Even if we, well, let's not even say even, since we will probably spill over the 12 weeks and actually may move toward 13 or 14 weeks, which means that I lied to you. I told you it would be 12 weeks and it may be more than that. I already see some heavy sighs and drooping shoulders, but since there's just so much to pack into this, I'm trying to do several things at the same time. It's helpful to be able to talk about, for instance, we're right now in the second phase of this, which is where my spiritual life intersects my real world. So we've looked at work. Last week we looked at marriage. This week we're going to look at family. So this is where a man's spiritual or inner man intersects his real life. But it's also helpful to discuss that in terms of principles that we should remember, principles that we should learn. But, and this is the key first point, simply because we introduce a principle in a given week related to a certain topic doesn't mean that the principle applies only to that topic. So for instance, what are some of the principles that we've looked at so far? No looking at notes, this needs to be in you. One principle, somebody call it out. Something that you would say is universal. Who am I? There was a solid principle. There were actually three things we looked at together. You can either...
Identity was one.
Yep, go on. Well, that's a good start. My identity?
Purpose.
My position? Scott? My purpose. Those three we looked at together. My identity, my position, and my purpose. Now, we looked at them as standalone. Today, we're going to look at them in the context of fathering. Last week, we could have easily applied them in the context of marriage. So here's the thing about a principle. It applies universally. Just because we don't talk about the principle in a given week doesn't mean it doesn't apply. So what is your responsibility? Anybody? We talk about a principle in the context or in relation to a certain responsibility. What is your additional responsibility?
Application
is one thing. What else? Okay, we're still tunnel vision there. I introduce the principle. Now all of us say, how does that apply to other areas of my life? Not just the area I'm discussing. How does that idea apply to other areas of my life? So now we're going to look at another one. We're going to look at another of the multiplicity of principles that we've already looked at. It was the principle of the lie. Somebody want to describe that for me? We have exchanged. We'll start it that way.
Well, a lie is something.
We have exchanged the truth of God for a lie, and therefore inside of each of us is either some degree or great degree of the lie of the world. And we said that it gets there, how? Because there are so many other influences in my life besides good ones. And so when a man comes to Christ, he has a large percentage of his life built on lies. Now, that doesn't mean that it's all wrong. How much falsehood does it take to make truth not truth?
A drop.
A drop. And therefore, the lie never, and we talked about this, the lie never makes its way into your life and mine because it is a blatant, obvious lie. It's the Trojan horse idea. The lie makes its way into our life because it looks attractive, it looks believable, it looks reasonably understandable, and it's pretty close to the truth. Just not quite the truth. And so it makes its way into our life and then permeates throughout our understanding. That's a principle. That a principle can apply universally. So now, what was the topic we looked at last week? Get me worried, guys. Yeah. How does the principle of the lie impact or intersect with your marriage?
There's things, preconceived ideas of marriage that are not true.
That's one thing. That's one. Let me pause right there. If I do not meditate on principles throughout the week, I will never really truly come to understand them. What we do here together is just this much of what needs to be done. If you do not take these ideas, take them with you. Here's a question. How many of you open that ring binder between Saturdays? The rest of you need to if you don't. Let me just say it the way it is. And I'm going to tell you why right now. Okay? This is the way ministry works. So I'm one person. And this could be any one guy who has a heart for other people. So I'm going to connect with this one, this one, this one, this one, this one, this one, this one. And no kidding, that's about what my life kind of some days looks like. And then there's a few over here and a few down here and all that. Let's be real here. How effective do you think I can be at connecting with all these people? Well, honestly, how good can I do that? Those of you who meet with me, you know how well I can do that. Not so well, right?
You get a lot of practice.
Thank you. So, if we want to help, and remember where this started, our church is growing. In addition to our church growing, every one of us knows men who need truth, who need a friend, who need additional understanding. How many of you know one man that you can think of right now outside our church who is having marriage difficulty. And I don't just mean they had a fight last week. I mean they are having serious marriage difficulty.
Do they have to be married?
Well, there's a good point too, isn't it? Okay, so do I have at least a few hands? How many of you know somebody who is having real financial difficulty? How many of you know somebody who's having health difficulty? See, by the time I name two or three, every hand in the room should go up. What does that say? That means that we are surrounded by people who need to be ministered to. How many of you have ever been ministered to by someone who is either lame or ineffective in their ministry? Boy, every hand should go up there. Right? Maybe I should say, how many of you have been ambushed or attacked by someone who does ministry badly? If you were not already a believer, how many of you would have become believers or would have been moved further in the journey toward becoming a believer as the result of that man's ministry? None, right? So what does this world need? There can be a one-word answer here right now. What does this world need? You're the closest. You know what the answer is? This world needs, and every one of you should right now be able to say, me. If you don't believe that yet, then you need to go back and revisit the identity, the position, and the purpose. Because the week before, I gave us a homework assignment. Who remembers what it was? And then, when it wasn't well executed, I renewed your opportunity to engage in that homework assignment this week. What was it?
Purpose statement.
Okay, a purpose statement is a nice way of saying it. How many of you did that? I guess I should ask it a different way. How many of you didn't do it? How many of you were here at least one of the 2 weeks so that you knew about it? Okay.
Nobody's going to admit to failure. Because that's what it feels like. It feels like failure.
How many of you feel that it is beyond your capability right now to do it? Notice I'm looking over everybody's heads. I will not make eye contact with somebody to intentionally make them feel uncomfortable. I don't want to do that. If you feel, honestly, that it is within your capability to do it and you have not done it, give me a reason why.
How many of us really don't?
No, I'm not. How many of you would like to raise your hands right now and say, I don't really give a rip about this guy out here?
Some days.
Okay, yeah, right?
Some days when John says you can all go to hell, some days he's right with me. What did I say? Well, if that's essentially what you're saying, from the front you said, you know, you're not out there ministering to people. It's like saying you can all go to hell. I'm not going to engage today. I can see your earnest, and I'm going to walk right past you again.
Okay, let's reel it back in. I got to be done by 9. You are part of God's plan for reaching the men in this community. You are. Let's say it again together. I am part of God's plan for reaching the men in this community. I can see that most of you really still do not believe that.
You know what I wanted to say is that you put that out on the line so many times, and you find out that most of the men out there think that they really don't need your help. That they'll be okay if they just muddle through it on their own.
There's no question, but as an insider who has been on the... Remember, this is something that every one of us can say with complete authenticity. When I look at a man who is out, and I don't mean this in any way judgmentally, but when I look at a man who is out in the world, I can say, I have been where you are, you have never been on this side of the divide. I know what it feels like to be you, you have no idea what it feels like to be an authentic follower of Christ. So, you have insider information, and when you were an outsider, were you resistant? When you were an outsider, you knew every explanation for why you didn't want to get too close to someone, or you didn't even want to be candid enough with them to admit where you were struggling. John, you had something you wanted to say.
No. Oh. Just say that's right. That's right.
Some days I'm
reaffirming.
Okay.
Some days I'm still resistant. I've been doing this for a minute.
Right.
I'm a ministry leader here. I'm still resistant.
Well, what does that say? That says that we all still need each other.
But I think that sometimes there's a comfort level. There's a whole comfort level to this. Like, I'm not there yet to walk up to somebody. And even if I know your life is in the toilet, I need a crack in that door for me to open my mouth and say, you know what? I've been where you are. If I don't have that crack, I'm sorry. I'm not going there. Because that's like me running into that wall. Because you're not ready to hear what I have to say. So there has to be a certain, personally, a comfort level for me. And then there has to be, you have to give me a little something for me to feel warm and fuzzy inside to say, you know what? I've been where you are.
Well, maybe the first thing you say isn't all you say. It's the introduction. You make some connection, and at some point, you're going to be able to say more and share more. That first thing is, let's call it the introduction. Little connection, he hears you, that, and at some point, maybe he wants you to say more. You'll hear that, say that. And these people, of course, they're all resistant. But once we say a little bit, at some point, there's going to be opportunity to say more. Get your foot in the door, like the salesman. Just get your foot in the door.
I have an incredible amount of respect for what you just said. Because it's still the truth for all of us. So let me break down this additional divide. Because most people think, most guys, even in this room, think that there's the few super connectors, super get it done people who just know how it's done or know how to get it done. They're the uber Christians that have figured it all out. And then there's the rest of us who can't do it. Every day, once you know that this is part of your call, remember what you said? I have to see an opening. I have to see that crack. The rest of us do too. Do you think I take great delight in being put off by somebody? Of course not. So I'm doing the exact same thing you are. I'm looking for the opening, the small opening. But I'm looking. The you of 5 years ago, would you have been looking? Of course not.
Here's the whole factor. I'm not going to take us all down this road because we'll teach on this and you'll say, oh yeah, that's true. We're not just doing this within ourselves.
Yeah.
We have the Holy Spirit.
Right.
And there's a whole other factor dynamic there that helps us and shows us and gives us the ears and the ability and the power. So that's all. We're not doing it all by ourselves.
No. So whether you are new to this or whether you've been doing it, Bob's in sales. Are you not constantly looking for what Justin described, but in a different way? The opening, the interest level. I couldn't approach them giving from this angle, but it would be important to them to give maybe based on this angle. They wouldn't give now in this way, but they might give later in that way.
Interest is the second step. Getting your attention is the first.
And so you're constantly looking for something. That's all any of us is doing. We're looking for an opening. We're looking for an opportunity. That's why a few weeks ago I posed it this way. If you had a son or a daughter that needed help but they were resistant, how long and how many ways would you look for an opportunity for an opening? How long? You'd look until, right? Until, whatever was on the other side, you would look until.
Cleveland.
Yeah.
10 years. She was still looking. My mom was still looking. You know what I mean? She's not. How long would you look for somebody that was lost?
Okay. Let's reel this in. Let's start out with a focus on principle. If we're not meditating on principles, we won't understand how they apply. With a progressive meditation on principles, we will be more comfortable with them and how they apply. We looked at another big principle, which is investment. We're in week 10 now, which means that, and many of you are going to breathe a sigh of relief now, within 5 weeks we should be wrapped up here. Okay? Can we just do this all at once so it doesn't drag out over a long period of time? At the end of that time, you may not hear the word invest in the context of your inner man, your inner life, for a while. We are 2+ months into this journey together. That is time enough to have established some new patterns in your life. How many of you are now investing in yourselves in a way, some noticeable way, that you were not 2 months ago? Okay, you can put your hands down. I mean, it's a reflective question. If you have not made, now here for anyone who couldn't or didn't put their hand up and didn't put it up for good reason, if you haven't done it until now, and if we only have 5 weeks yet remaining together that we will be on this topic, and if you may not hear the word invest again for a number of months, what makes you think that at the end of our time together on this that you're somehow going to start investing? In other words, if you haven't begun any new practices or new habits in 2.5 months, what's it going to take? Now just think about that. And I'm telling you, if you're in doubt about it, look me up. I'll meet with you. I'll help develop a plan with you. Not for you. I can't develop a plan for you. And Justin knows I'm pretty unrelenting in this. If it doesn't work one way, we'll talk about another. If it doesn't work 1 month, we'll talk about it next month. If I won't shut up about it, he'll avoid meeting with me.
Well, how many of us in the last two months have went up to at least talk to one person and said, hey, how you living? I noticed, you mean, like, tried to get in that door. I mean, how many tried to get in the door of another person's life in the last 2 months? I mean, maybe we're just not even trying to, not even put our hand on the knob. You know what I mean? And like I said, some days that is me, but in 2.5 months, if you haven't cracked somebody's door at least a little bit, maybe you're just not looking. Like you were saying, you're just not looking. I have those days, but hopefully they don't drag on into weeks or months, because then, now it's, like you said, now it's me. Now I have to look at me. Why do I not want to be in relationships? Why do I not want to be... Maybe, why am I so afraid of people? All those people who are just kind of...
And to speak to what you're saying, I think sometimes we get all this. You know, some of you could be up here and do this better than I'm doing it. You could present the facts. You might even do it in a way that connected better with the rest of you than I'm doing it. The difference between knowing facts and actually having facts change your life is that idea of repentance. And this is another big principle that we're going to turn down to. So it's actually at the bottom of the page. And in the interest of time, I'm going to have to ask you guys to read some of the rest of what's on that sheet. I want you to think about the idea of all of the principles that we have talked about. Go back through your notes. And we talk about stuff that isn't even in the notes, so I hope that every week you are taking notes in addition to just looking at what's on the page. Sometimes some of the best stuff we talk about isn't even on the page. So what does repentance look like? We use it in church lingo all the time, but I want to make this practical because repentance occurs every day in our lives. We just don't call it that.
Well, I like the way you worded it. And I thought methodically, just I don't know why I did it just now, but you reorient the ship. That's an iceberg. Repent.
So here I am. I'm going in that direction. My vision is in that direction. The focus of my thoughts is in that direction. And then I realize that I want to make a change in life. Repentance begins when what? What's the textbook definition for repentance? To turn. That's it. Let's not over religiousize. Would that be a good word? That doesn't sound right. Something. There you go. It is now. The moment I turn, I have now repented and I say, I want to go in a new direction. Now, at that moment, to an outsider, so somebody else is down here and they're looking at me, how much is different about my life right then? Absolutely nothing. I am the only one who knows that any change has taken place. And yet, even without any motion, even without any movement in that new direction, my life changed that day. Internally, my life changed that day. And everything that happens up here later on is a result of that one moment. So everything that happens in all these intervening weeks, months, or years is simply me catching up with the new destiny that I have as a result of the turn that I've made. Now, I realize that's maybe an oversimplification of it, but here's the good news. Is anybody here frustrated with their lack of growth? Has anyone ever been frustrated with their lack of growth? Let me share a personal story with you, okay? When I'm traveling, I will listen to a ton of podcasts. There's times when I just need to shut off the intellectual stuff and listen to some music. But I'm telling you what, I have never felt dumber than I felt this week. I mean, some of the stuff that I was listening to, and it's like they were taking some complex ideas and breaking them down. And this was a podcast about technical things, but for people who were pretty non-technical. Can I tell you, I didn't even understand the non-technical explanation. They were using terms in the non-technical part that I'm thinking to myself, really? I mean, I was really down on myself. I'm thinking, okay, I am this old, I have invested this much of my life, and I am amazed at how stupid I feel right now. That's a personal testimony. I don't know what it has to do with anything. Have you ever felt that way, though?
Sure. Well, Andy Stanley said that he's been termed as like non-theologian.
Yeah. Yeah.
He says it's because I don't read in Hebrew.
Right.
I just give you the information. Here you go. Here's the practical application of this in your life. Your move.
So, referring back to the notes. So you start to move off in this direction. So how many of you are on the two steps forward, one step back process right now? Yeah, I made some headway. Really? I'm back here again? Well, I'm not all the way back there, though. So we can get easily depressed because we think it should be all that way. But honestly, if we spent the next 25 years of life taking two steps forward and one step back in a new direction, would our lives be different?
12.5 steps. 12.5 steps forward.
Yeah.
Slow progress is progress.
That's a principle. You can apply that where? Yeah, everywhere. What does that look like in your marriage? Have you ever been frustrated with the progress in your marriage? What does that look like in your parenting? You ever thought you were making headway with your kids and then? Yeah, every hand should go up now, right? What does it look like in terms of your personal spiritual development? You ever thought, yeah, I'm really doing well now. This is a good week. I'm going forward. And then the next 3 weeks, not much happens. You know, I keep doing this because I can't find the cap. There we go. Now I can set the marker down. The real power in principles is not just to be able to understand them and cross-apply them. The real power in principles comes when I am able to begin to layer them. To see that not only does one... Can I finish and then... It's to see that not only does this individual principle have power to change my life, but when I start to put multiple principles together, it enhances my understanding all the more. And here's what it'll do. Sometimes the first thing that a principle does is exactly what I just described about myself. It makes you feel like you don't know all that much. It makes you feel as if you are starting from nothing. That's a really good starting point because nothing more will fit into you so long as you are full. The first thing that a new understanding does is open you up and make a bigger container out of you so that more understanding, more wisdom can fit in. Question?
Yeah,
I'm just wondering, how do I gauge that? You said, you know, how do I even know if I'm 12 and a half steps forward? Where's, how do I gauge my spiritual growth? Because I think sometimes I can get mired down and I'm just not getting into it. I'm just not getting into it. I don't feel like I've grown in it, you know?
Friends, somebody knows you for a long time, you don't see it sometimes yourself. They can look at you and go, yeah, think about where you were. They can, a lot of times, articulate steps in your life that you might not see.
But I've only been in the church for 5 months, 6 months, a year.
Okay.
I have long-term spiritual guidance, like, people. Those people aren't in my life, who've known me my whole life.
What's it, well, what did you guys use in sober recovery? Everybody can look at it. You can say that you're like, look at it.
Yeah, I know, but oftentimes
yourself.
Yeah, but see, the inventory, that's the scariest part for people. None of them want to do it. So I don't want to inventory and look and see this.
Okay, stop.
Like I said,
what is a benchmark of growth then? The willingness even to look at myself is a benchmark of growth. Whereas 6 months ago, I wouldn't even have had the courage to look inside myself and face who I am on the inside. Now I can at least open the door a little and look in and say, oh, well, I'm not ready to see more. I'll just close the door for a little while again. But then,
you can ask the question, have I changed?
Yeah. Yeah.
That's
a good point. I think, to speak to what Tom said, we help each other with the process, which is another reason why we need a couple of close, tight brothers that we can interact with.
That was my point.
There's going to be somebody. There's somebody that's close enough to.
I'm not even going to know if I made a course change unless someone tells me.
Well, and the other thing, and here it is.
They're going to be as brutal on you as possible.
Yeah.
And then at the end of it, you can stand back and say, no, that's changed, and that's actually one of the best ways for me to help myself, because I know inside what's changed and what hasn't. I don't feel like it's somebody that's just blowing me up to make me feel better about myself. I know what's changed.
Yeah, you see your growth. I think you see your growth clearer by looking at the things that went wrong and the negative parts of your life rather than looking at the positive. I think you have a better chance of moving ahead by taking them and examining that part of your life.
I was just going to say, if you can see an increase in love for your neighbor, be that a coworker or whatever, and if you can see an increase in your thirst for the word, that's the best way to gauge in my life.
Now, those are good.
Sometimes things you look back in your life that you handled, you did, the decisions you made, and you thought that was all good the way you did that. You can look back and maybe that wasn't the best way to handle that. Maybe I was wrong.
Yeah.
I thought I was so right, but you start seeing stuff in a different way. And was it all?
You saw the door crack and open, and yeah. Five people walked in. That's what it looks like to do what we're calling this, what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
Someone asks one question, what does that look like? Bam! One question, bam, dive in. When someone asks the question, wow, dive in.
And the other question, the other thing here that you asked a question, but how often do we need to know? And we don't all need to know at the same frequency. Some people need to know every day. Some people are okay being on mission for a long period of time. So there's a metaphoric explanation that I heard a long time ago about the concept of growth, and that is, that if you plant a field full of carrots, but every day you go pull the carrots out and look at the roots to see if they got better, how many carrots are you going to end up with? You're going to spend so much time fixated on growth that you don't let growth occur. Did you give your hand up?
Just a question. Should we be able to look back and see that we changed and grown? I mean, you know, we handle things differently. The sins that used to trip me up aren't there as much anymore.
Yeah, we should.
Yep.
And I think, too, okay, I'll give you another personal testimony. See, sometimes it really is horrible to be at the front of the room because then you got to share your own life, right? So there's this woman. It always starts with a woman. There was the woman, right? Yes, I know. That was the joke, Jim.
Was she driving a car?
Yes, she was. Okay? Yes, she was.
That's how I lost my license the first time.
Engineer or an officer?
And the door opens, and I walk through the door, and it wasn't a good door, and I should have closed the door, but I wouldn't. And I was determined to open the door, too. So the woman wants to do a U-turn at our place. And I knew what she was going to do, but I wanted to pull in. And I naively acted as if this was my place, and I was allowed to pull in and do what I needed to do. And she literally just cut right in front of me. And let's just say that I did not handle it graciously and like a man of God at that moment, okay? That's all I'm saying on the topic.
Amanda was really offended by that.
But then she saw it with you, so she...
Yeah, she said, oh, he's always like that. Who cares? That's not how the story ended in my... Okay. Have we covered any good ground here? Because I'd like you to, before we move into the parenting topic, I'd really like you to cement something new into yourself. This is where I'm going to go this week. This is what I'm going to do. So if you haven't committed to investing in yourself by getting some new resources, doing something different, you need to start. And the kind of investment I'm talking about is not the reaching out and connecting with somebody necessarily. Remember, you have to do the investing before you are ready. Investing does two things. It makes you ready, and it also gives you confidence that you are ready. Just think about that. If you have nothing to offer, and you know you have nothing to offer, what do you do when you see the opening? Right. I can't help. I don't think I would have anything to add. But as you gradually invest, and here is the amazing part of it, I think there are times I would say that I can safely, without exaggeration, and I don't like to exaggerate and tell you marvelous spiritual things that happen in my life. I think there are occasions, doesn't happen every day, but I think there are occasions when God prepares me a day or two in advance of some encounter that I didn't expect to have, so that I am there with what's necessary. Again, I'm not saying that happens every day. But here's the thing. If you are not already committed to that investment track, how can God prepare you?
What if all that person needed was a kind word?
Yeah, sometimes that is it.
Everybody can
say
to them, just stand there and listen to them.
You see how much more of this you get and are ready than you want to give yourself credit for? Oh, that was not self-confession. Oh, you were one of these guys who talks in theoretic terms about the rest of us.
There's so many of the people I know in the 25 years that I've been doing this. That's how it all starts.
Yeah.
How you doing? I'm good. Are you lying to me?
Mm-hmm.
Yep. I ask people that. If I know by the look, and you say, oh, I'm good, you're lying. Yeah.
Even that second step. I'm good. Nah, it doesn't look like you are. That's a growth step. The you of 5 years ago might have just taken that at face value and said, oh, that's good, and I'm good too.
Okay, cool. See ya.
Yep. And no ministry opportunity happens. All right. Parenting.
People won't admit that.
It takes time.
They won't admit it. You guys are not going to tell you. They're
going to
say, okay, everything's fine.
But before I go, how many of us feel like you can look at someone? Maybe somebody at your work, and they come in and they're having a rough day. Like, you can look at them and know them. How many? It's almost every hand in here.
Yeah.
So if you take that step, and that's just standing in the doorway, you're just interrupting their day. Say, hey, you doing? Have a rough day? Sounds good.
Well, and let me even come back to, I'll put Bob on the spot here for a moment again, because Bob is in sales. Aren't there universal things that you can pretty much predict that will be true about all people?
I'm not sure I know exactly.
Here's one thing, in light of what Jim said, I think most people, how many of you would say that you are honestly right now having a great week in all areas of your life? that every area of your life is running like a well-oiled, fine-tuned machine. Hands up. Now, if that is true for you, and we're going to assume that you are not some rare breed of male, isn't that true of every man you're going to meet? And therefore, we can safely conclude that in one area or another of a man's life, there is something that he would, under the right circumstances, with the right person, be willing to say, yeah, this area of my life isn't humming right along. So I can safely make that assumption. And what's the worst thing that could happen? Let's assume that one person in 100 is actually having that universally great week. Did I offend them? Probably not. But for the other 99, I may have given them an opportunity to begin to discuss something. Or at very least, they noticed that somebody took an interest in them. The mere fact that somebody takes an interest in them beyond the superficial might be an encouragement to them. So we can make some general assumptions about people because the human experience is pretty universal. All right, on to parenting. Let's read this together. You are a dad. It is a remarkable call and position. We are at the top of page 28. It is usually a self-elected call. How many of you chose to be dads? Now here's an interesting thing. Many guys have a kid. It wasn't they had a kid by choice, but now they find themselves as fathers. There's something really powerful about our relationship with God. And we can learn from that relationship about how to be good fathers. God chooses for us. The scriptures say that we are all adopted, that we are not, by virtue of our human birth, God's kids. And that we are adopted or grafted into the family. And that's enough spiritual lingo. But what does that say to each of us? Think about that. What does that say to you? Come on, I want to hear that expressed. What does that say to you? There you go. God chose you and chose for you. Now, as a father, what should that prompt in us? See, we produced kids, but did we intentionally, do we on a daily basis continue to choose for them? And does that thought prompt us to act? There are times when, I mean, even this week when I was thinking about this, and it's like as soon as I had 5 minutes, I pulled over to the side of the road and I called my one son. It was just, I mean, I know that sounds kind of lame, but it's like, yeah, and I have not chosen to be his father today. I want to do that. As it turns out, he wasn't available and he didn't answer the phone. But later on, I left a message. He called back and we had a good conversation. Choosing is very powerful. Don't ever forget that. All right, we're going to look at a verse together here. Children are a heritage from the Lord. You know what? Let me stop here for a moment because I think sometimes we get so into this for our own benefit that we fail to recognize why we're here. Why are we here? We're here to become coaches. Now, for many of us, some of what we'll talk about, this it will be the first time that any of you have heard it. But you're not only here to hear it for yourself. You're here to hear this and to understand it because there are men that you will meet that need to know this. And you need to help them to get it. Is there anything that you have heard in the last 10 weeks that you're glad that you've heard and that you think would have been of great value to you even 5 or 10 years ago? Could it have helped you to do something? Now think about this. You are now one of those circles that can connect with other circles. Are there, if something, anything, one thing that you have heard in the last 10 weeks has been extremely valuable to you, and you wish you had heard it a number of years ago, chances are that many of the men that you meet wish that they had heard some of this stuff as well. So you're not looking at this solely from the perspective of, oh, I need to get all this stuff into me. That's important. But you need to get it into you so that you become a portable container to carry this truth with you to the people who need it as well as you. And I hope that makes sense. All right, now that I've interrupted myself, let's get back to this. Children are a heritage from the Lord. Offspring are a reward from Him. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior are children born in one's youth. How blessed is the man whose quiver is full of them. We're going to do what we've done a few times, which is to dissect a scripture. We're going to come back to that basic skill, and you're going to do this for us. You're going to do it now. So, what does that say? To you, let's really break that text apart. What does that teach you?
Our kids are a gift of God. Too often we just think it's a natural thing, something we've done. It's really from God.
So in one way or another, and we can't necessarily put words to it and explain the whole thing. To me, when I really think about it all, it's pretty amazingly complex. But even though we are the biological originators of our children, that somehow our kids are part of God's plan and in God's plan. There's some other words there that give us some additional clues. Okay, here's what we do. We look at stuff and we think, well, that's just interesting flowery language. We don't quite get it, so we move on. Stop on that word heritage. Children are a heritage from the Lord. Okay, what is a heritage? It is something that is either given down to generations, but also something that is received. So the heritage that I take from my family is what my family has passed down and given to me, and which I, in turn, will then pass down. Children are a heritage from who? So what does that say? That might be a response, but what's the truth that prompts that response? This isn't that complex. Your kids come from an eternal God who had a plan to give you that before, and we can borrow this idea from Ephesians, before the foundations of the earth. God had a plan not only for you, but He had a plan for the kids whom you would parent. And that was part of the gift that He gave to you, which you are in turn going to give to future generations. Your kids are the gift that you will give to future generations. Okay, let's pause on that. You see how dissecting this carefully brings out rich meaning? What would it mean to fully embrace and understand the concept that your children are a gift that you give to future generations? How many of you have ever heard the phrase, how many of you have ever used the phrase, usually before you're of age 25, because after age 25 it kind of like goes through the cracks, but I'd like to make a difference in the world. I'd like to change the world. Let's put the two of them together. Children are the gift that God gives to you that you in turn give to future generations. I would like to change the world. Those are the two ideas. Put the two of them together. Children are one of the primary ways in which I don't have to go off 1,000 miles, 10,000 miles from home to make a difference. As a matter of fact, if I fail to do my job right at home and I go off somewhere else and do it, I've squandered God's gift to me. I have squandered my heritage. I've wasted it. And he makes this very clear. Like arrows in the hands of a warrior are children born in one's youth. Now what does that say to you?
You can use your children to
kill people. Yes, you can. And maybe you won't get caught, right? That's one thing it could say. But, okay, now let's turn that funny statement around and make it practical. How many are born warriors? How many people are born warriors? How many people are born archers? If I am going to be an effective warrior, if I am going to be an effective parent, what do I have to do? Train and practice. Practical application that comes from this. Parenting does not come naturally. Good parenting, becoming a skilled warrior, a skilled archer. Becoming a skilled archer does not happen by accident. It happens through intention and practice and commitment and practice and learning and study and practice. And that's the point that's being made here about what it takes to be a good father. So, children are the heritage that God, eternal God, passes down to me that I, in turn, if I do not squander it, will pass on to future generations, but it will only be done right and well if I practice and develop the skills necessary to be a good father. How blessed is the man who has a quiver full of them? Well, on that last point, we might question that. There's a limit to how large a quiver we want at home. Huh? So, children are a heritage. Children are a reward. Children are an invitation or a call from God to learn. Children, finally, are a chance to reach the future that you will never see. Your kids are going to go places that you won't. Here's something I wrote in the notes, in my notes on the side. Your children will parent your grandchildren. As a matter of fact, that's one of the best tests of how well you parented. Watching your kids parent their kids is a great test. You'll be able to see what stuck. You'll be able to see what stuck that you'd rather didn't stick, frankly, sometimes. Oh yeah, that's me. Oh yeah, he's doing that because I did. Oh wow, I wish I hadn't done that when I was young. Well, too late now. But maybe not. It makes for great conversations. My older son and I have had marvelous conversations. Mostly one-sided because I'm not sure if he listens or pays any attention, but at least I feel better after I've had the conversation. About, you know, when you were young, I don't think I handled that well with you. And let me tell you why. And with the wisdom that I have, not much, but with the wisdom that I have at 50-something, I can say to you, the chances are when I was 30, I shouldn't have done it that way with you. And here is what it has. I sowed that seed in your life, and here is what it looks like when it's grown up in your own life. And maybe you want to look at that. And it's my fault that that weed is in your life. And I'll admit that. But I can't pull the weed out of your life anymore. You're an adult, and you have to pull that weed out of your own life. And I've actually had, not, I haven't used the weed illustration. But yeah, that's me and him. But I can also see some things that I'm pleased with in both of them. Okay, that's me in them too. And those two sons will parent kids and touch a world that I will never reach. But most of us never think about it that way because it's the ordinary stuff of life. It's the cereal and the buy new sneakers and the run off to sports this or that and all the other stuff. And there's this marvelous heritage, and that's why we need to pause occasionally and look at that. There is this marvelous heritage that God has given us and we get to pass on, and we just don't appreciate it for what it is sometimes until after it's already slipped through our fingers. All right. So we're going to look at a few things in the next half hour. Some of the big principles that I think it's important that we share with our kids. The first principle is the idea of choice. And I put down here that I believe, and I really firmly believe this, that choice is one of the most powerful gifts that God gives to humanity. Choice is simply the greatest gift that God gives to us. And yet, choice is also one of the most lethal weapons that we have in our control. The illustration I use is of the car. You can create your own. My job is to illustrate so that you understand, but I really would like you to fashion your own illustrations to present these truths. So imagine if you had... Josh, I got that. Okay. And when I've forgotten it, it'll be there tomorrow morning, too.
I don't want to be a distraction.
Okay. Well, it's okay if you showed up late and you have to leave early. Don't feel it.
I got my great cup of coffee.
Okay.
I have 30 minutes of teaching.
Okay. All right. It's good to see you. All right. So if you can imagine that somebody gives you a high-performance automobile that can take you great places, give you marvelous times, could you abuse the use of that car?
Sure.
How many of you know from personal experience that you could abuse the use of that car? Could you do harm with that car? Could you run into things? Run over things? Let's make it a little bit more serious. Could you bring harm to people with that car? So there you have it. The same container. The same conveyance. And it can bring us joy. It can bring us delight. It can bring us fun and satisfaction. Or it can bring destruction. Now, every one of us as dads has to find a way to teach our kids that. Choice is the most marvelous, amazing thing that God gives to us, and yet most of us at one time or another abuse that good gift and end up in some really ugly, nasty places. Now, here's one of the things, one of the additional principles. Remember what we've said, principles layered bring rich understanding. Here is an additional principle that we all need to layer into this. When I choose badly, I don't only bring consequences on myself. How many of you are the recipients of collateral consequence from somebody else's life? Can you look at collateral consequence of your own behaviors that has happened to other people? Another illustration from my week. I parked on the side of the road at an auction that I needed to go to, and it was one of these... There's a lot of stuff there, but it was in the middle of nowhere, so the parking was along the side of the road. Right across the street from me, right across this road, parked in the other direction, are a number of other vehicles, one of which is like hanging out into the road. So that every time two cars pass each other on the road, one of them has to stop so that the other can go around this vehicle that's hanging out into the road. And I parked my new rental car right down the road from that, and I stopped and I thought, you know, what's going to happen when one of the two cars that needs to stop after I leave, what's going to happen when one of them doesn't stop? And one of them glances off the side of that thing that's hanging out into the road and bounces across the road into my new car. How am I going to explain that? Or more to the point, am I going to get home? Let's forget, how am I going to explain that when I get home? Is the car going to get home if I do that? I made a choice to park in a different place. Do we think about that when we choose? When you were 18 and you made choices, did you think about the collateral damage in the lives of others that would occur as the result of your choice? Now, Now that you're 45 or 50 or 55, are there times when you still forget to think about the collateral damage in the lives of others? So how do we manage choice? And as a parent, this is important. So inside of me is character. So when I start out, my character is not very well developed. Would you agree with the fact that your 15-year-old self maybe didn't have all the character qualities and traits necessary to live a fully functioning adult life? Is that a safe statement?
That is correct.
All right.
Sometimes even a little older than that.
Yeah, but we're giving everyone the benefit of the doubt. We assume nothing bad about people here. What do your parents do? What define character for me? Okay. What does character do for me? Describe for me a relationship between character and choice. And will help to influence your choices. Describe to me now a good result of solid character. Okay, let's do it like this. See, we tend to think sometimes of character in terms of its ability to restrict us from doing certain things. So out here, we'll say, this is all the good stuff that I can do, and out here is the really bad stuff that I don't ever want to do. And so my character keeps me from going across the fence, if you will. My character builds a fence so that I don't go out here. We'll just say that that's the way some people think. It's certainly the way kids think. And so because they don't quite have the internal character developed, what do parents do? Yeah, they put fences. Exactly. We call them rules. But that's what they are. They're fences. And they say, don't go outside this rule. What's the rule? It's just that. It is a fence. What is the purpose of the fence? To keep them from hurting themselves and others until, there's an until here. Do you live by all the same rules that your parents put in place for you when you were 15 or 10? What's that? Rules are the boundaries that we or other people put in place for ourselves to protect us while we develop character. Because once we have the internal thing, we don't need other people's rules. Our character helps to keep us within reasonable boundaries. Does that make sense? So others enforce rules for us, which are just artificial fences, while we develop our internal character. So if you do a great job as a dad of building a fence, but never work on this, what happens one day when your fence is no longer a valid fence in their life?
A wild child.
Yes, a wild child. And a lot. Now, which is easier? You're going to laugh at this, but which is easier, clearer, and quicker to understand as a male, how to build a fence or how to build character? What do men do in parenting? What do men tend to do? Build fences. Big, huh? Stone walls. Solid fences. Big fences, right? Especially men with daughters, right? Have you ever seen a protective dad with his daughter? Maybe when you get to be 28, we'll think about your dating for the first time. Maybe. And he's got to meet a lot of qualifications. But if we do a great job here, what do we set them up for? Success. You know, my fifth time around the thing, you should take the marker away from me. I mean, it's obvious that the marker and I are out of control. You should just step in, intervene.
Really
yeah, well.
me, the choices of their kids, the first thing I thought of is as a parent, allowing the kids to make their own choices that are appropriate to their age, because parents never want to see their kids get bumped or scraped or whatever, but it's necessary to let them do that.
That's right. That's developing their character.
Yep. If you protect them too much, they don't have that choice.
I'm going to borrow now, to build on what you said, that was a very good point. I'm going to borrow some Andy Stanley teaching for a moment. He uses the term guardrail. So here's the cliff in life. Here's the guardrail, and here's the road. Obviously, I can't draw real well, but anyway. So, guardrail. Where does the guardrail sit?
Side.
It sits on the side of the road, but it sits inward of the real danger. So if I put a guardrail in a child's life, and imagine this exactly as it is, a guardrail on a road, what is the purpose to the guardrail? So, okay, easy. I know this is the first time you're all excited at the same time. Does anybody here have some personal experience with guardrails? Is that why everybody wants to share? Okay, one at a time. What is the purpose to the guardrail?
From going off to
the keeps you on the right side of
the real danger.
There you go. That's it. The guardrail is a protection from the fatal, perhaps, danger. But is there damage when you hit the guardrail?
Yes.
Of course there is. That is what you're saying. That when I don't put guardrails up, when instead I build stone walls and boundaries and all that because I fear too much for my kids need to have some glances off the guardrails of life. Our job as parents is to figure out exactly where to put the guardrails progressively so that the kid doesn't go off the cliff to his own peril, to his own death, to his own danger, but also we can't save him from everything.
Right.
Let him bang off the guardrails a little bit. And help them to understand that that's what's happened. So have your kids ever banged into a few guardrails? Wow, mine have. Now, as a father, okay, here's the next challenging thing. What do we want to do? We want to get on with our own life. How many of you have a life of your own apart from kids? How many of you had a life before kids? How many of you hope to have a life after kids? It's a bit of a joke, but how many of us want to be involved in the rebuilding process after guardrail experiences? So if we make this a really practical illustration, for those of you who are handy or remember when guys used to be handy and they used to... Remember when... Wow, does that sound like the term an old person would use. Remember when cars could actually be worked on by normal human beings? You actually understood how they worked? So you might pull the car back into your garage. And it was your kid's car, but you might spend the weekend kind of like patching it back together so that it was it never quite looked the same again. But they got a valuable lesson. Well, who wants to do that with every guardrail encounter in a kid's life? We're resistant to that. This is our call. To gradually adjust the guardrails and help them with the consequences they experience and make sure that the consequences are not fatal, but informative. So that the consequences become teaching tools for them, for the future. All right. Questions, comments before we move on? All right. Let's go to the top of page 29. Got about 15 minutes left and we need to be out of here. Good parenting is necessary and it can never be replaced by good schooling. Have you ever been tempted to just pass your kids off to other people? This is something that a lot of men do. What school doesn't take care of, maybe church will take care of. What church and school don't take care of, maybe my wife will work on.
Well, if you were a coach at any point in time, you see that all the time.
Do you want to tell me more about that?
Yeah, people make their kids go out for sports just because they don't want to deal with them. Bring them over, drop them off, they go home. Sometimes they don't come back 15 minutes, half an hour after practice is over.
Can you tell that Dave has some personal experience with that and it's not all been good?
It's unbelievable.
Can you tell that Dave seems to be passionate about that right now?
To me, I can't understand how a parent could even think about
that. Easy, Tiger. Dave is very definitely passionate about that. Now, for some of us, this becomes a real reevaluation point. Why do we choose to pass that responsibility off? Let's be honest about this. Because even if it isn't something that you have personally done, if we're going to help other men, we need to understand why they do it. And they don't do it because they're horrible, thoughtless, selfish monsters all the time. Sometimes, maybe. But for the most part, that's not why men don't parent well.
Sports illustration. Incorporate the high. That's what you do. The kids in sports. You know, you think about why. It's kind of like, that's what everybody's doing.
Tom, did you just integrate a life principle that we've talked about into a new understanding? Wow, that works. Okay, so they bought into a lie. What other reasons might they?
I think more of themselves than they think of anybody else.
Okay, so they haven't learned to think beyond themselves. You know what? How many of you, when you were 10 years old, were deeply concerned about the problems of the world and other people? 15? Do I hear 20? Yeah, maybe I did.
How old were you when you started to care?
Yes, how old were you when you started to care? Sometimes you never reach that. It is a growth process.
Man, I was concerned about the world in 14. The reason why? World War II had started. I was in grade school, 14 years old. The teacher stood before us and said, there's boys in this class will be in the army.
Mm-hmm. There are certain things in life that grow you up that are outside of your control. Some generations live through things that he just described, and it grows them up quickly. Other generations don't have that outside thing that helps to grow them up or change their awareness. So we've looked at two things. One is, many men have bought into the lie. And they don't understand that. Another reason is that they're self-interested. If you were to ask them, they wouldn't even necessarily say that they were selfish. They're just self-oriented. They're thinking about themselves. What else?
Might not have a clue about baseball. Coach knows baseball. I don't know what the coach does.
It's a comfort level. They're comfortable with their kids being with you because they trust you.
Okay, so there's a very positive thing. The kids trust you and they believe that it will be good for you.
Well, the parents do.
Well, I'm right. That's what I meant.
So that the kids, because I will not think you're leaving.
Or it's how they were raised. Maybe their dad didn't give a flying rags for them. Maybe their dad dropped them.
There you go. There is the... So what is the heritage that has been passed down? Remember, kids are a heritage, and our heritage that we get to squander or to use well. So there's an example of the negative aspect of that. Okay, so what else? So that's another reason why a man might. You see what happens when we start to understand what's going on inside a man's heart? We can start to help them. How many of you would feel helped if your good friend walked up to you and said, you know, you're a selfish jerk and you need to change your ways? Would you be helped by that? And would you receive it well? Well, you would be helped by it if you took it to heart and did something with it. But would you honestly take it to heart in most cases if somebody said, you're a selfish jerk?
At least it makes you look at it.
Okay. You're a bigger man than many that I know, my friend. I'm not sure if some of the people that I know, if I would be able to get all of the one-syllable word jerk out of my mouth before there would be negative ramifications to my face as a result of what I just said. Understand what I'm saying? So, What's another reason?
Some of it's inherited. I mean, they act just like their parents. You know, if they're
okay. That's the
resident. They think that's the way you raise them until you realize how you are supposed to raise them.
That's the model. We'll just use it that way. That Justin described it, you're describing essentially the same thing. That is the model of parenting that has been... This is why I say a lot that the home is the primary incubator that teaches us. Last week, what did we say it teaches us? The home is intended to be the primary incubator in which we are developed to be A, good husbands, and B, good parents. Think about this. As a father, how much of your own fathering do you look back and say, how did my parents handle this? At least when you're a young parent. What other reference points do you have? So what do you think about? How did my mom and dad do it?
Actually, good reference points, I think, in this generation. My generation, I think, has an advantage in good reference points because mom did not work.
Okay.
So you had parents in the home at all times. Today, that's not the case. So, and you can see that.
Okay, so listen to me carefully about this general principle. If you do not think that parenting is the primary incubator where you learn how to be an adult and you are a parent, then what do you think your job as a parent is? To create some rules. We'll do a mini thing down here, okay? Remember to stop me if it gets...
I can't see that, Justin.
Okay. So we do a mini collection of rules, right? We'll keep Junior inside of this.
Three. You're only at two more. And then I'm taking the pen. I'm telling you right now.
While he's holding me accountable, I asked him to do that, he's holding me accountable. Give me that thing back. Do you understand, do you really believe that what you are creating in the home is the developmental schooling experience from which your kids will learn how to be moms and dads, husbands and wives? But we don't usually think about it that way. When you're involved in the day-to-day of parenting, is that what you're thinking? Oh, the example that they see right here, right now, is going to help them to be a better husband or wife. Nah, that's usually not what you're thinking. Not at all. But that's the truth.
I was thinking maybe another item there would be ignorance. You just think, oh, the kids will be all right without any input from me. They'll grow up, they'll be fine.
That's actually a powerful one here. They just don't know that it takes a lot of work to do this. And I'm not naturally equipped to do it. You know, it seems hard to believe that this is something that it really does seem hard to believe. Two of the most primary institutions that were given, marriage and family, they almost happen without a lot of thought, but boy, living them out takes great skill. Of all the marriages that you are aware of, how many are done well? Really well. Yeah. Of all the households where kids are raised, how many of them do it well? Have you ever... I mean, this is something I can remember this... When I was a younger parent, I would think... Wow, those kids, I'd love to know what happens in that home because those kids seem to do it okay. It's like, it's not like they never misbehave, but there's actually some genuine caring and concern that the kids demonstrate. They actually like each other. Siblings that like each other. I mean, that's, to me, that was remarkable. My two sons hated each other. They set each other up for failure. They set traps for each other. They tried to get each other in trouble. And I kept saying to them over and over again, and you would think after the 80,000th time that I said this, I would have learned that it wasn't working. But I'd say, you know, right now you don't like him, but he's going to be your brother for life. I said that. It made no difference. None. You think?
Yeah.
Okay. Hasn't worked so far. I'm hoping for that day. It takes an incredible amount of work, and most men are not aware, which speaks to, I think, what you said, the ignorance. Most men are not aware that it takes training to be a good husband. It takes training to be a good dad. How many men are willing to invest in that training? Now, here's the next question. If it's true that it takes training to be that, where does that training take place? Who offers that training? Who offers the training to men? Isn't this one of the ways in which we are trained to be husbands? Isn't this one of the venues where that training takes place? Where we are trained to be good dads, to be good husbands? Sometimes we devalue church because we don't understand what it's to provide. If I want my kid to grow up to be a mathematician, where do I send him? Well, okay. If I want to, as a man, be a better father or a better husband, where would I go to get that training?
That's the problem. I mean, really, that is the problem. Because, like the joke, when a baby's born, should have instructions.
Yeah?
Well, it doesn't, but you know, you got to do certain things for that baby to grow to a certain point. But then after that, it's kind of, you don't know where to go. As a guy, particularly, what's my involvement here? What do I need to do next? And to go to the next instruction, like out in the world, so to speak.
I think one of the things, sometimes church is devalued, and yet there is no institution that is better equipped or more called to build into the inner man, to help the inner man be a better husband and a better father. Now think about that. And yet, what percentage of men walk through the doors of a church? And when I say church, I don't just mean this big edifice here. I mean the family that we create, the opportunity that we create right here in a place like this for men to come together and talk about these things. How many other venues, I know I've asked this dozens of times already, how many other venues, how many other places, how many other times do you get together with other men where you can talk about your call in life, your call to be a husband, your call to be a father? Where else does that conversation take place in your day-to-day life? It doesn't. So this is what we offer. There's one final thing that I would like to put on this list of why people don't. And remember, let's relate this back to what Justin said. Remember what Justin said at the beginning? I'm looking for an opening, and unless I see an opening, I don't feel that I have anything to say, or I shouldn't say. Every one of these is an opening in a man's life, if you look for it. See where he's bought into the lie about being a dad. What a dad does, what a dad doesn't. If you know a little bit about his own family, see if there's an opening there. Watch for his own self-interest. You don't point it out to him in a negative way. What's another one? This is a big one that we all struggle with. And it relates to identity. How many of you would like to be professional failures in life? I mean, failures in your profession, your chosen profession. I didn't mean that you made a living at being a failure. That was a poor way to word it.
What's a pet?
Probably more than I make. How many of you signed up for that? Yeah, I would like to be a screw-up at work. How many of you spend hours of your day at work? Right? Men get absorbed in being successful. Because what's the opposite of success?
Failure.
Who wants to be a failure? So if I need to be a success, and what is my success at work tied to? Besides money, what else? Self-esteem, which is who I am and what I think of myself. What principle does this tie back to? My identity and my position. How do I see myself? If I have to see myself as a success, and if the only way I can see myself is, how many want to be a failure? We ask that. Nobody wants to be a failure. Therefore, by default, I have to assume that everybody wants to be a success.
How do we identify ourselves by what we do in life? That's not all bad, but that's, you know, it's much more than that, but that's how we identify ourselves.
So when I am insecure in who I am, when I don't know who I am and what my call is, the only way that I have to express and prove both to myself and those around me that I am successful is through what I do. So when we judge a man and we say, he doesn't care about his family, that's not true. He may care about his family, but he hasn't made peace with who he is. And when he doesn't feel good about himself and he feels inadequate in himself and he's struggling to be successful, there's no time left in his life to be a good dad. But if you can secure that man's identity, do you see what a powerful gift this is? If you can help this man to understand that he has an identity, a position, and a purpose, and he doesn't have to claw and struggle and strive for it every day of his life, it liberates him to fulfill the purpose of being a father. Does that make sense? So we don't judge guys that are still doing this. I've been there in the past week. If many of you were honest, you'd have to say, yeah, I've been thinking about my success, or I've felt a little bit inadequate in my... How many of you have felt inadequate at something in the past week? What's happened at that point in time? Maybe we have forgotten who we are in Christ. That doesn't mean that we don't fail and we don't screw up, but maybe sometimes we've forgotten who we are in Christ. And when that happens, we resort to who we are in the flesh to try to prove to ourselves who we are. And we do that at the peril of, remember what we said? Those collateral damages? When I take the vehicle of choice that God has given to me and I drive that vehicle of choice in destructive ways, which means I try to prove I'm successful to myself, I drive that into the guardrail and there's collateral damage, not just to my own life, but what's some of the collateral damage? There's not enough time left to invest properly in parenting my children. It's 9 o'clock.